It's Channel 9 Live. We're here at Build in the Moscone Center. They've got pool tables and they've got Xbox and Asteroids over here. But we're not going to do that because we've got the goo. How are you, sir?
Good, thanks.
That is a lovely red polo you have there, sir. Is that new?
It is, actually. I bought this in Chicago.
It's not just the same polo coming back?
Yeah, this is. I got trapped in Chicago for many days with my family without any luggage. And so we went to the mall and actually bought red polos for me there. And
if I imagine that you have like this amazing, like, you know, palatial mansion with a walk-in closet that's just like jeans on one side and just red polos on the other. I think that's how we all choose to think of you.
Minus the palatial mansion, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Just a small one bedroom somewhere in Bellevue. But the point is, it's just red polos. It makes it easier to choose, right?
Oh, yeah, I packed and I brought three red polos and two pairs of jeans. And
seriously?
It's awesome, yeah. Just a little roll away. I don't have to think in the morning, you know.
That's awesome.
I had two different types of black socks, but yeah.
I heard there was some controversy that you were going to wear a blue shirt, like an azure blue polo.
I did at Tech Ed. Like, I gave the keynote in a red polo shirt, and then I did a press conference afterwards. And I
quick change.
Mary Jo Foley really wanted me to wear a blue shirt, and so just for her, I put one on, and then I had all these people freak out on me, like, why?
What's happened? Something's dead. Whatever it is, it's dead, and he's wearing blue.
So I'm back to red.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Cool. So thanks for letting me hang out in the day two keynote with you today. That was cool.
That was pretty awesome.
Yeah,
you rocked it.
I thought I did okay. Yeah. I thought the team did really great. A lot of people involved in these kind of things. You know, one of the guys at Ars Technica, one of the press type folks, before the keynote was writing up a little, like, you know, preparing for Build day two, you know, your man on the ground. And he says, we're getting ready for day two keynote. Hopefully we'll see lots of coding demos. And he called it kind of a Microsoft peculiarity. And it made me think, like, are we the last of the great coding demos? Do the other big tech companies do live coding? And why do we do live coding?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because it's, I think some marketing team sent around some analysis I saw like 6 months ago, mm-hmm. on, like, you know, how do different companies use their keynotes and what percentage are, you know, demos, you know, of those, what's writing code versus what's a finished app, mm-hmm. you know, how much talk about partnerships, how much bring on customers,
kind
how much
of competitive talk about landscape of keynotes.
Yeah, you know, and every kind of major tech company has a slightly different shtick. I think for us, you know, I think a Build or a PDC is a very distinctive thing.
Yeah.
If going to Tech Ed, you know, we don't typically have coding demos on stage. Or if we do, we have one.
Right, or it's IT stuff, right?
There's more IT and kind of end-to-end demos from an IT perspective. That's one of the things I love about Build and PDCs before it, where you can kind of geek out in the keynote and, mm-hmm. and kind of enjoy it. And I think that works well with the developer audience.
Yeah.
If you have a lot of CIOs or you have a lot of business analysts in the audience, it probably would kind of go over their heads or bore them. But, you know, I think for developers, it's kind of nice to know, you know, let's celebrate the geek out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think when you came on and started coding, you know, the pace kind of picked up and you could kind of, you know, the applause started coming in, and you know, I think customers really like it too.
How long have you been here at the company?
You mean in
Microsoft? How long have you been at Microsoft?
This is my 17th year.
Wow, dude.
I know, it's kind of...
That's a long time. I've only been here 5.
I think it's 17. Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And has it always been like that? Has it always been technical keynotes that I did, developers, it's been a thing always? Or did you usher that in? I'm trying to get if it's a shift as a company towards doing this, or if you kind of like said, like, I like that, and I'm going to make my people do that too.
I don't think it was... I don't think I can claim credit for that. I think I've certainly in the last maybe 13 years done a lot of them,
mm-hmm.
So maybe I helped popularize it. But I even remember when we first introduced .NET 1.0, the 2000 PDC in June. I think Mark Anders did a live coding demo.
I remember that one.
And you know, that one was great because it introduced people to .NET for the first time.
Yeah, that wasn't the Don Box PDC. That was the Don Box was a couple years before that when he was in the bathtub.
I think I can't remember if that Don was before that or after that. He did a couple. There was the infamous bathtub.
The Don and Chris show was like coding live, just like, hello, let's code for an hour.
I think that was 2003 or 2005, that one. Because I was in one of those.
Yeah. Because that's when I first got my taste for it. And it's just like, okay, you know.
Yeah.
They're not just hanging out there.
It makes it real. I mean, they're stressful because you're kind of basically, there is no net. I mean, there's you can always push a button and go to a backup machine, but it... That ends up being kind of a bit of a demo film. I mean, it was nice today. I think we did probably collectively 10 or 12 demos.
Right.
You know, all with a live cloud environment with many machines with all these distributed systems.
Right, right.
And, you know, everything worked, which was awesome.
Yeah.
And, you know, but I've now done two conferences where the internet connection died halfway during my keynote. And I've discovered it's really, really hard to demo the cloud when there's no internet connection.
Right, like the cloud may be there on the other side of the internet connection.
And
like,
so, and they were unfortunately international. I have a little MiFi device that I can pull out in emergency. But this one was in Japan and one was in the UK. And there was no 3G connection.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, then you kind of go like, hey, let me show you some pictures of what the cloud looks like. And so it's, you know, it's nice when you have an event like today and it all works.
Yeah, somebody was asking me, someone actually asked me with a straight face, if it was a video and we were just going like this in front of it. And I was like, well, you know, I mean, the example that I gave is it's like there's real world stuff that may take longer, may be more complicated, there may be hiccups here and there, but it still works in the real world. But like this is like more like an Olympic event.
Yeah.
Right? You run, you jump, you flip, you stick the landing, and that's great.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that I'm like jumping and flipping like that all day long.
Yeah.
And you know, and I can like file new company in 10 minutes.
Yeah. It's nice to kind of see the code and the steps. Because you can kind of go like, okay, this is real. This isn't just like 1,000 lines of code buried deep inside the system.
Yeah.
You know, you can kind of see it. But yeah, there's an art to, like, how do you cram 25,000 concepts into a 10-minute demo?
and have it
all work and feel integrated.
So what was announced? What GA'd today or what was released today?
We had a pretty big week, a pretty big day. We have a couple big announcements that came this morning. Probably the two biggest ones for today are our websites, Windows Azure websites. Service is now GA.
Okay.
So we have an SLA.
GA means general availability.
General availability.
I noticed, actually, funny story, last night when I was practicing the demo, it said preview.
Yeah.
This morning, for the first time, I'm like, hey, it's gone.
Yeah.
That's real. That means it's like service level agreements, right?
Yep. It means basically we provide a financially backed SLA, which means if we violate it, you get money back. And we also provide enterprise support. And it basically is just a general statement of, hey, we think it's ready to run your business on.
Mm-hmm.
And so we GA'd the official release of websites as well as mobile services, which are kind of two very popular, high productivity features we have on Azure. Obviously, the release of Visual Studio 2013 and .NET 4.51 and the new ASP.NET with all the one ASP.NET pieces that you demoed.
Yeah, yeah.
Another huge announcement. And I think especially for .NET developers and in particular ASP.NET developers, there's just a ton of goodness there where, you know, it's nice because there's things that people kind of went wow and aha. I think you probably got like 20 applauses in your 10
minutes. I was getting applauses in places like I didn't expect that applause at all.
Yeah, but please continue.
Stop.
It's nice because I think there's something there that people can look at and kind of go like, oh, that'll make my life better. Ooh, that can make my life better.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's really cool. So those were some big announcements. Other big things that we did today then is we shipped for the first time AutoScale. Which is on Azure, which is a built-in feature that we're going to enable for all of our compute services. So websites, VMs, cloud services, and you'll see mobile services light up very soon with that as well. And basically now you just click on the scale tab for any of those services.
Okay.
And in the past, you could always manually scale up or scale down like how many VMs are running for your website. But now what you can do is you can actually say, I want between 1 and 5 VMs.
Okay.
And I want to have the range be driven by what is the CPU of the VMs.
And
so
I can five say, is the max? Like, it won't go
or
more?
Or you go 10. You,
well, I mean, the reason I ask is that the gentleman's got a question here. He's talking about spending limits. We can talk about that in a little bit. But what's interesting is he's scared about distributed denial of service attacks.
Right.
Now, I have my podcast that I do on the side. It is pretty much chilling on an extra small or a small all week.
Yep.
And then the show comes out on Thursday.
Yep.
I just manually run a script to make it a medium, and then I bring it back down again.
Yep.
Can Autoscale do that for me now?
Autoscale right now can't change between VM sizes. But what you could do is you could run your show all week, and you could say, I could have, say, between one and, you know, pick your magic number, five, three, four VM instances.
Right.
And you'll be able to do small or
so I can just say one small, and then it'll just say up to five small on when it comes out on the end of the week.
And basically the way it works is you click the range, like, you know, I want between one and five. And then what you do is you with websites, you can specify the CPU boundary. And so you can say, I want to run this between 30% and 70%. And what that means is if you ever go above 70% aggregate CPU, we'll start up a new VM. And so, you know, your site will scale out across more VMs. If you ever fall below 30%, for some period of time, we'll start turning off VMs. And so the benefit there is, you know, you don't have to actually know or guess, I'm going to need three. It can be completely elastic based on actually what you need.
Okay. And what's to keep that from, like, going turning on and off and on and on? I mean, does it matter? Do I care about that? Like, from a financial perspective, the gentleman's question about being scared of attacks, like, doesn't that mean that someone who didn't like me very much could just set up a curl and a loop and just start charging me five VMs worth of money? Like, he could just attack me and max out my...
In general, for example, like CPU, most denial of service attacks... you know, not all, but many don't really kind of hit you on the CPU side. Mm. They're more kind of like connections and things like that.
Okay, they're network issues, not trying to make you work hard.
Often,
issues.
It depends on the attack. You know, I think for Azure, you know, we do provide DDoS, some degree of DDoS protection. We don't provide an SLA for it, but if we see that you're DDoSed, we'll actually, you know, we have kind of a networking system that can kind of kick in and protect you. Mm-hmm. And I think you can probably get money back if you can say, hey, I cost money on that.
So if a customer said, I'm being attacked, is there some networking layer in Azure to, like, help them out?
We'll actually detect if we see abnormal behavior like that.
Mm-hmm.
And partly to kind of protect the rest of the system, it'll kick in.
Sure.
And then certainly if you think you're being attacked, you can call us. And we can also follow up on that and make sure.
I think you understand what the fear is, right? I mean, I think people are excited about the cloud. People want to use Azure, but they don't want to wake up. Literally, they're afraid they want to fall asleep, and there's a $1,000 bill when they wake up in the morning.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, there's a couple other things that we were announcing today that I think help with that. One is alerting and notifications. And basically, what that does is you can actually set up an alert so that if your CPU spikes or your availability gets impacted. And eventually you'll be able to kind of have alerts for everything.
Right.
You know, we can actually send you an email proactively that you can take action for, or eventually an SMS message. So we can actually tell you if, you know, your usage is spiking or some particular meter or rule gets violated within that.
Yeah.
And then we are also going to have a spending limit so that you don't have to worry about going above a certain threshold.
That's cool.
The other thing that's nice is about, like, the auto-scale capability is, one of the things we announced earlier this month is we're moving to a per-minute billing model, or we move to a per-minute billing model. What that means is you no longer get charged for a full hour if you run your VM. You only get charged for the minutes you use it. And so take your podcast. You know, right. There might be a spike that's like 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Now instead of having to pay for the full hour when a VM gets spun up, you only pay for the 45 minutes.
And didn't we also make it so stopped and shut down VMs are not charged? They just charge for the storage.
Yep.
Because I've done that before, too. I've left a VM on overnight.
Yeah, yeah.
And forgotten about that.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Our auto-scale rules will also get smart enough so that you can actually have timer-based rules.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say, hey, at 10 o'clock, shut down my VMs for dev test, and 6 a.m., turn them on.
Now, I noticed that when I go file a new project, there's choices for, like, individual login, and there's organizational logins where you could take an intranet app that I run inside my firewall, and I can run it in the cloud, and somehow it's going to then authenticate back to myself?
Yep.
And can I do that with, like, if I have Office 365, am I going to have some way to do that as well?
Yep.
Can I do that now?
Yep.
So I can do Office 365 single sign-on today in Azure.
Yeah, so one of the cool things so every Office 365 customer, when they sign up, they actually take, they actually create a directory in Windows Azure Active Directory. Mm. So every company that's already using Office 365 is also using Azure with Active Directory.
Oh, wow.
And the cool thing is you can now basically use that directory not just for Office and Exchange,
sure,
but then you can build apps against it. And one of the things that we did with the new ASP.NET tools update, or ASP.NET update that we shipped today,
right,
preview release, made it really easy. When you create a project, you can now just go ahead and type in your domain as part of the new project dialog.
Okay.
And not only will it let you use Active Directory for sign-on, or Azure Active Directory for sign-on, it'll actually register your app. And the really cool thing is that will work not just on your local dev machine, but when you go to publish it to, say, a website,
right,
it'll actually fix up the endpoint URL so that it'll work inside Azure Active Directory when it's deployed with whatever URL you ultimately go against. And yeah, the beauty about that is it makes it really easy to enable single sign-on. You don't need your machines in Azure to be domain joined at all. So you can just take any vanilla VM, or you can run it in a website or a cloud service.
Yeah.
And that enables you to have single sign-on for all your employees in the enterprise.
That's cool. Now, I've got a bunch of VMs that I bring up and bring down. Like, I've got one for sending email that I keep off most of the time, and I bring it up. I've got some jobs and stuff.
Yep.
I was thinking about setting up a continuous integration server.
Yep.
So those are more kind of development-centric VMs. Yep. There's been some questions about, like, I want to make a CI server, right? This is all compute. I mean, arguably, Azure and Microsoft wants to sell CPU hours, right? You're trying to sell, turn in the crank. So if I have some work, I want to put it into Azure.
Yep.
Are there any plans for development-centric VMs where I could run VS in the cloud and terminal into it, or set up Team City and terminal into that?
Yep. Yeah, well, so one of the things we did earlier this month as part of a set of announcements we made around kind of MSDN dev test was to basically do a couple of things. One is we basically said you can now use all of your MSDN dev test licenses inside Windows Azure VMs. You know, previously, the MSDN dev test licenses couldn't be used in any hosted environments. You couldn't use them in Azure or Rackspace or Amazon.
Mm.
You can now use them on Azure. And so, you know, that lets you basically spin up SQL or BizTalk or SharePoint for free for dev test purposes. What we then did is we also discounted the Azure VM rates between 33 and I think 97%. So you can just go to the Windows Azure's VM gallery and say new Windows server, and you get a discount if you're running it on an MSDN license of about 33% over the standard
so
rate.
So if the subscription is MSDN, it's not in production.
Correct, yep.
So then you get a discount.
We automatically give you a discount.
You do pay as you go for the ones that aren't in MSDN.
Correct, yeah. And for the MSDN discount, you can run any number of VMs. So you could run a Team City, you could run a TFS, you could run whatever continuous delivery or integration system. And then the other thing that we've done is we basically give every MSDN customer monthly credits on Azure. And so basically an MSDN Pro customer gets $50 a month, premium 100, ultimate 150. And that's on the discounted rates. So like for example, like if you're an MSDN premium customer, $100 a month, you could run 3 virtual machines, 16 hours a day, 31 days of the month for dev at no cost.
That's cool.
You basically can use Azure and the VMs in particular to set up your Team City or your whatever environment, script everything out, and basically run it for free.
So I could go bring up Windows, install what I need to install,
sysprep
the machine,
make
an image of it, and then whenever I want to fire it up, I could script it and do it.
Absolutely.
Rock on.
And one of the other big things we announced today is prior to today, if you went to Azure, you need to provide a credit card as proof of identity.
Yeah.
Even if you're an MSDN customer.
Yeah, which has been tough for students, kids overseas, people who don't have a credit card.
People that get their MSDN subscription through their company, and they're kind of like,
they don't want to give their personal card.
I don't need my personal credit card, and the company's not going to give me their credit card. So starting today, all you need to do now is if you're an MSDN customer, sign up to Azure, the free trial, use the same Microsoft ID that you use that's registered with your MSDN account.
Okay.
And we'll recognize it and say, hey, you're an MSDN customer. You don't need to give us a credit card anymore. And so you can basically now sign up, spin up, use that $100 a month of free credits.
Whoa.
Do your whole environment, never give us a credit card, never pay us anything.
And $100, that's pretty good. I mean, I can do a lot with $100
in
Azure.
Yeah, so like 3 small VMs for 16 hours a day, 31 days of the year, you could do. If you wanted, let's say, 80 VMs for 20 hours, you could do a load test. and not use up, you know, and still have money to spare in your credits.
That's a lot of VMs.
You could run 500 websites with, you know, I don't know, 10 SQL databases.
You know, it's not like we have a script or anything. I was going to say off script, like what script? But no, I was just realizing something. I noticed, and I've been talking about this, that when I'm doing shared websites, you know, you're like one website's this many dollars, and you get up, and somewhere around 6 or 7 shared websites, the calculator says, $50. And I noticed if I go to reserved instead of shared and do one small VM, it's the same price as 6 shared.
Yep.
Which means that I could run as many websites as I can fit on that thing,
yep.
up to 100.
Up to 500.
I can fit 500 now.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, with the release we did today, we now support the ability to run up to 500 individual websites. I think it's per subscription, per subregion. So you could even, you know, create multiple subscriptions and run more. But yeah, that basically means if you go ahead and go to Azure and use the GA bit, you know, the official release today, so it's got an SLA. You basically can create a reserved instance, and you can create up to 500 websites.
Now, some people might say, "Oh, that's chilly. You can't possibly fit that many websites into one." I mean, that's just...
depends. I mean, if you've got a lot of static content, you can easily do 500 static websites in IIS in a 1.7 gig.
No problem.
You know, if you've got a lot of ASP.NET apps that are storing lots of things in memory, you know.
My apps are 30, like Hansel Minutes, the podcast is maybe 30 or 40 megs.
Yeah, so I mean, but you could easily do, you know, 30 or 40 of those inside a reserved. And, you know, with reserved instance, you can also pick your VM size. And so if you wanted to, you know, you could run in a large, which is a 7 gig, and you could run lots there. One of the things we also ship today is 64-bit support. Mm-hmm. So if you want to have one site that uses, say, 6 gigs of RAM, you can now do that as well. Prior to today, it was always in 32-bit mode.
That's cool.
And I saw someone ask a question earlier about, hey, how can I look at the memory of my site in production?
Right.
One of the other things that we ship today is memory dump support. And so you can basically take a snapshot of the memory, dump it, I think, to blob storage, download it, and open it up inside either VS or WinDBG.
And just debug it.
Yeah. Like
it. All right, let's do this. So we've got, I can't tell, it's either 5 minutes or 9 minutes, some small number of minutes with
like
the LED
minutes.
Here. Hopefully it's 9.
Yeah.
Now, you're a smart guy who talks a lot.
Sorry.
No, it's good. But what I want to do is I want to see if we can bang through every question.
Yep.
So you don't get to do the whole thing.
Okay.
Can we do that? You ready for that?
Yep.
All right, let's do it. So first, we talk about development-centric VMs. File new, Visual Studio, test in the cloud?
Yeah, I think you're going to see more of that in the future. Yeah.
All right, cool. That was really good.
Yeah.
That was very terse.
For people who didn't see the question, basically, yeah. Yeah.
Are we going to see more development-centric VMs?
Yeah, I think you'll see a lot more VM templates in general show up in the gallery over the next couple
of
months.
Yeah, and the MS OpenText stuff is really cool. The library VM Depot, you can check that out. So is it okay, is it appropriate to auto-scale only on CPU? Are there other things I might want to auto-scale on, like memory or something like that, queued requests?
Yeah, it's a good question. So right now with the preview that came out of auto-scale today, the two heuristics we support are CPU, and then we also support queue length on storage accounts. So for example, if you've got a queue where you're posting messages into, you can sort of say, hey, my backend worker role, if I got more than 150 orders queued up inside the queue, start spinning up VMs and bring down the average.
Right.
But you'll see a lot more metrics. You know, I think service buses as a metric will come on in the next sort of 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And you know, the goal is, you know, you could basically have an infinite set of metrics that you drive it off of.
Okay. So the Azure Pack, and make sure that you Google with Bing for that. Go search for Azure Pack. It's an on-premise Azure. They want to know if blob storage and things like that will be in the Azure Pack. Right now you can get websites, you can get service bus, and you can get VMs.
Yeah.
Other features maybe coming to Azure Pack in the future where I can have on-premise Azure features?
Not this calendar year, but it is something we're looking at for the future.
Okay, cool. Actually, I bumped into Anders, TypeScript Anders, also C-sharp Anders Heilsberg, in the hallway. We were talking about TypeScript. People jazzed about TypeScript. Any Azure TypeScript kind of cooperative crossover action? I know we've been talking to them on the ASP.NET team.
Yep. Well, certainly, yeah. I mean, certainly being able to use it inside ASP.NET apps is one thing. I think you'll also be able to see it in the future with our Azure Mobile Services, which supports you writing back-end server scripts in JavaScript today with Node.js. You also see us support C# web API backend scripts as part of mobile services as well, hopefully a little bit later on this year.
Cool. Someone asked about how Azure, they know that Azure is Windows-based, but is there a possibility to host Ruby on Rails on Azure? In fact, you can. I will take that one. You can go to my blog and search for Azure and Linux, and I show you how to script out, I think I did 5 Linux VMs.
Yep.
And one of the neat things you can do is take a look at the MS OpenTech VM Depot. We have pre-done, pre-set up Rails from Bitnami, yep. Rails images, so you can have a Ruby on Rails app up and running in 5 minutes on Azure.
Yep.
And I do it all from the command line. It's really, yep. really cool. So,
you
yeah.
You can do what Scott did. I can top you.
Are you going to top that? Yeah.
With even new stuff.
Something I don't know about.
Yeah, so one of the things we actually announced yesterday, or this week, is a partnership with EngineYard. Which is a popular Ruby on Rails platform as a service provider.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually moving their service onto Azure. And
get
so,
out.
Yeah. And so basically you're going to be able to go to the Azure portal starting next month.
Yeah.
And you can basically sign up for EngineYard directly as part of the using the Windows Azure Store.
Right.
And then you can deploy Rails apps. Any Ruby app, for that matter, in a platform as a service model.
Dude, that's hot.
Yeah.
So that's like Mongo Labs. We have Mongo Labs,
yep.
Where you can go and have Mongo running. So I understand that it's Azure VMs, but it's hidden from us because
yep.
that's infrastructure.
Yep.
So they'll manage the VMs, make sure they're up to date, security updates, yep. all that kind of stuff. They handle that.
Yep.
So just like the experience I have deploying websites,
yep.
we can now do that with Rails.
Yep.
You heard it here first. Good job.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good job, sir.
Yeah, I was
That's pretty cool. I had no idea that was going on.
I've been hanging out with the EngineYard guys today after the keynote.
Oh, they're here?
So they're here, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
I'll go check out their booth. Rock on.
Yeah.
That's cool. Question about removing things. What happens if you remove storage, remove a virtual machine, privacy policies, things like that? People want to put something into Azure, and then maybe they delete it. Is it really gone? Are there pieces of it there? All those questions? Are there answers on WindowsAzure.com for things like that?
Yeah, there's a trust center on WindowsAzure.com that talks a little bit more about kind of how we think about compliance and which certifications we do and just security and trust in general. When you delete stuff, it's gone. For many services, it's gone immediately. Sometimes we have what we call soft deletes. Because we often have customers that will call up and say, oh my God, we deleted something. Before we kind of, garbage collected out completely out of the file system, we sometimes put a slight pause so that if they make a mistake, it's recoverable. But
right.
but in general, if you delete something, expect it's gone.
Yeah.
I had a customer last week that accidentally deleted their whole drive and we're like, hey, can we get it back? Is it somewhere? And we're like, sorry, unfortunately, it's really gone.
Yikes.
We take data access and privacy very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And so, we don't have any Microsoft employee that just has access to that data.
Yeah.
It's not like it's stored on disk and we can just like get access to it.
Back up your stuff.
Yeah, to make sure you have good backup policies and we don't think of you put stuff in the cloud and suddenly lots of people can see it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all virtualized and it's designed to be secure.
A common question about static IP addresses. People have been talking about static. They may have a limitation where a customer absolutely has to have a static IP address.
Yep.
What's the story on static IP address VMs and websites?
So basically the promise we make on Azure is if you deploy a VM or a cloud service,
mm-hmm.
As long as you don't delete that cloud or service or VM, the public IP address will never change.
Oh, okay. So it's a lease that's effectively static yeah. until you delete that thing.
Yeah, and same with websites. If you buy, for example, an IP address SSL cert,
mm-hmm.
we also guarantee that IP address won't change. And that's so you can do, A records and, map whatever you want to it. Now, what a lot of people have asked for is I'd like to be able to lease an IP address
yeah.
and then dynamically reassign it between services.
Yeah, I might want to flip my VMs back and forth between
yeah.
them.
Yeah. And so that's something that you'll see us add in the future.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunately the way we kind of map and model our IP network range. There's some architectural plumbing that we're in the process of doing to make
right.
that sort of something that we can offer. But that will be coming. But right now, if you deploy a cloud service or a website or a VM, as long as you don't delete that deployment and as long as there's some VM running, We guarantee that IP address should never change.
All right, we got 30 seconds.
Got
now
it.
You have 34 seconds. So JVM on Azure. You can run anything on Azure, right? C++, Java, PHP,
yep.
Node, Ruby now.
Yep. We did a big announcement with Oracle on Monday.
20 seconds.
As part of that, they're now fully supporting all the Oracle products, including Sun, or including Java. And so Java is now fully supported on Azure.
Rock on.
And you can get Oracle Enterprise support if you want to.
Can we do it? Did you do it? You did
auto-scaling it? Metrics on Service Bus queues coming in the next couple weeks.
Yay! Channel 11,
you will be able
seconds.
To come up with a custom login page soon for Azure Active Directory.
And it's over.